Hello and welcome to another edition of Sounds Like Comics, the podcast based out of Perth, Western Australia. I'm Luke from That Film Stew, and I'm joined by Jay Ryan.
Hello.
Today's topic, The Tick, starring Peter Serafinowicz in a big blue tick costume.
It's, very blue. It's funny. It's not, it does that thing that TV shows do when it comes to a costume like The Ticks, where they don't put the lenses in the eyes.
Which, well, that's a good point. The character in the comics had the white lenses.
Yeah. But I think in this case it works, because when they did the show previously with Patrick Warburton, he didn't have anything over his face. The faceplate was completely open. But this is like that nice happy medium of like, you get Peter Serafinowicz's performance, and you don't have to worry about having put in anything post-production.
And we get two versions of the costume. The pilot, it has a darker, almost organic-looking material. Yeah. Yet we get the primary blue, which we know to be the Tick, from episodes 2 through 6. Now, we are here, as we say, to talk about the Peter Serafinowicz Tick series. But before, I thought we'd do like a brief overview of the history of the character. I watched this series, and I think before I'd seen anything else, whether it was the comics, the video game, the live-action series, or the animated series from the 90s, I was almost at a blank. So I've gone back and done a little re-watching and some research as well. So just in case you've only seen the Amazon TV series, this is a bit of a overview. The Tick was created by Ben Edlund in 1986 as a newsletter mascot for the New England Comics chain of Boston area comic book stores. And the character started being, well, he still is, I guess, a spoof, satire of superheroes, specifically American superheroes. Powers and abilities, I've never really known.
Yeah, it's... his powers and abilities seem to be pretty much super strength and durability, like that of a tick, I'm guessing, is the joke.
But this is what I've found. He's nigh invulnerable, which makes him able to withstand intense trauma. But this doesn't stop him feeling pain. Like, he's got his antennas on his costume are sensitive. He does feel pain, but just gets on with it. So let's say it's a crashing into the ground or having a bullet shot into his teeth. It won't necessarily break his body, but he will feel the pain. Now, nigh invulnerable. I looked it up. Again, I did research. I looked it up. What that means, sometimes or vaguely defined as a way to make the hero only as tough as he needs to be in advance of the plot.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I never knew, but that's...
but that's also very typical of comic books as well, because Superman's a great example of sometimes, or especially pre-90s, or he seemed to have his power level seemed to go up bit by bit by bit, but it got to the point where when he was in his original character origins in the 30s and 40s, a bullet would graze him, but he would feel it. To in the 80s, he could shrug off a nuclear blast. It's like, that's how strange, yet he could get harmed by other things. You're like, that's a bit inconsistent, and that's the nature of comics, which I'm guessing is why Ben Edlund chose that specific line of, he's nigh invulnerable.
He doesn't fly.
Nope.
But you could say he leaps tall buildings in a single bound. Again, yeah. Superman, he's got the blue. So I mentioned we're going to get into other media. The Tick animated series ran for 3 seasons from 1994 to 1996. While some of the episodes borrowed from the original Tick comic books, many of the characters in the animated show were not in the comics, like Di Flandermouse and American Maid.
Ah.
My first exposure to The Tick was the animated series, but it wasn't packaged to me in the UK as a kid show. It was on BBC Two at 7 o'clock. So it was like an evening show.
I get that, especially given the type of humour in the show, because here in Australia, we had it on Fox Kids.
And I think later they did reruns on Fox Kids, but originally it was skewed more towards adults.
Well, I remember it from the 90s. It was a cartoon. It just got piled in. I mean, we had pretty weird cartoons in the 90s anyway. And it's like no one ever bothered to look. Like, yeah, it's animated superheroes. Who cares? But when I think back to this is a show I watched, I was why was this being packaged to children? Because it's and not right. A kid's sensibility at all.
Yeah, I agree, but it got put with Batman the Animated Series, X-Men.
Yeah, all the classics.
We have had a live-action series before. I think you touched upon it with Patrick Warburton playing The Tick.
Yeah.
It did get cancelled.
I think
they made 9 episodes and it only ran for 8, which was a bit of a shame. Characters other than The Tick and Arthur that you got to see in that show were Batmanuel and Captain Liberty, which were pretty much the same characters as the animated series, but they're different names.
Yeah.
I mean, Batmanuel works more of a spoof on Batman than, what was it, Di Flandermouse?
Or yeah,
something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, I get. And it's interesting because Patrick Warburton returns for the Amazon series as one of the producers.
Oh, really? I missed that.
Yeah, so it's nice to see that he's still getting credit because I guess it's a fan. He's a big fan of the character.
So we didn't want to get too bogged down on what had come before. We wanted this to be the focus on the new Amazon show, which I think 5 minutes covering everything else.
Yeah.
We can lead into the show we're here to talk about. But before we do that, the battle cry, Spoon,
is missing.
Yes. I don't understand.
No, it's... I do remember... In the books as well as the cartoon series, it wasn't something he had from the start. It was something, I think someone actually makes his cry, like he watches someone else run into battle yelling something and he's like, what's that? And like, it's his battle cry. And he's like, and he excited like a big kid is, I need a battle cry. And he uses the first thing that comes into his head, Spoon. So right. I'm hoping we get there, but I understand why it's not there at the moment.
I'm pretty sure Amazon picked up 2 6-episode seasons. So there's hope.
Yes.
In season 2, we'll hear the battle cry because each version in the other media, he yells Spoon.
Yeah.
So I'll go ahead, give us the plot for the new show. No Spoons in sight. In a world where superheroes have been real for decades, an accountant with no superpowers comes to realize his city is owned by a supervillain. As he struggles to uncover this conspiracy, he falls in league with a strange blue superhero.
Yeah.
Previous versions have all been about the Tick.
Yeah.
The focus of this one, interestingly, is Arthur.
Yeah, and especially for the first episode, it's...
Even throughout, it feels like Arthur's story. And at some point, or I think maybe halfway through the season, you can almost believe... or be led to believe that the Tick is a figment of Arthur's imagination because no one else, to begin with, is interacting with it.
Yeah, and I found that I started to get worried. I'm like, please don't play this like crazy and the Tick isn't there, because that was getting almost ridiculous at a certain point of no one interacting with him, like all these things happening. And you could imagine, because it's done really well, that's what it's like for someone who's suffering from a break from reality. But it does seem to be Arthur's... I guess he's our viewpoint on this whole weird, strange world. But it seems to be that nothing moves forward without him interacting with it first. For the series so far, at least, anyway.
I'm going to take this opportunity to give... a spoiler warning for the Amazon Tick series. It just occurred to me. We've not done that, but we're going to go full spoilers on the Tick. So have we read the comics? Personally, I haven't.
No, I've had a brief flick through of a Free Comic Book Day issue before, but I haven't gone full into them, mainly because I just don't have the time with all the other stuff I've got. And originally the comics were in black and white.
That's true. Yeah, I've tried. I've not gone as far as like opening the comic, but I've collected the Free Comic Book Day issues, but I've never gone as far as reading them. But since watching the new show and doing a bit of research for this episode, I'm more inclined now. I want to go and read some Tick. I want to fully submerge myself in that world, because with this show, it's pretty much giving a gritty, real-world take on this bonkers concept.
Yeah, and it's funny because Ben Edlin, the creator, he's a name that people, especially in comic books, should know, even if you don't know anything about the Tick, because the things he's worked on in the past, and once I found this out, it was like getting hit in the hammer with something that was a hammer that was standing next to me the whole time. He's one of the guys who writes for the Venture Brothers.
And Gotham, he does work on Gotham as
he
well.
He works on Gotham, he works on a lot of stuff at the moment, and he's one of Whedon's guys. He's worked on Buffy, Angel, and Firefly, all as one of the writers. So he's definitely been around, he still works on the current stuff, like I said, Gotham, he works on Supernatural right now, and the animated feature, Titan After Earth, he was the writer for.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I like that movie.
That was it's all right.
Matt Damon.
Yeah, Matt Damon and...
Drew Barrymore? Was that the actress, or am I just making that up?
I think it was Drew Barrymore. I was about to say...
we can confirm, yes, Matt Damon.
Yes, definitely Matt Damon.
And I've got so much respect for Ben Edlund being a part of every adaption. His name is always attached.
Yeah, as it really should be, because he's worked on a bunch of other stuff, comic book related, but just seeing that he's really a huge name in television...
I think we're both the same when it comes to the animated series. That was where we first got to see the Tick.
Yeah.
That was my introduction to the character. Mentioned video games. I think you said you played it on Mega Drive.
Yeah, the Mega Drive. It fell into the problem with 90s video games where the Ninja Turtles arcade game was such a success that they basically used the exact same game and just reskinned it.
Oh, right.
For whatever franchise they had just gotten a license for. So the Spider-Man games fell into this, a Captain America game fell into this, and unfortunately, the Tick did as well. Not that it's not a bad system like of playing through the game, but it's very much like, I've played this 100 times already.
And I've heard that I've not played it, but I have heard it's difficult. It's a hard game to complete.
Yeah, they're notorious.
We could talk about the notable differences, the changes that we see in this new version compared to what's come before. I think a big thing for me that's absent, other superheroes, which has always been a big mainstay of previous adaptions.
Yeah, even with Arthur, I mean, we see flashbacks for him as a kid, and he's collecting what I guess is either their Avengers or Justice League group, and they even see interviews with the only survivor of that group.
Superion. I forgot Superion. Yeah, he's in this. So you do see some other superheroes. I guess not on the level of the other adaptions.
Yeah, but yeah, the talking dog who was the companion of this group, and Arthur was, as a child, huge fan, had all the action figures and that sort of stuff. And one of the things, while we're talking about it, with the live action show, Arthur's costume, the fact that it's not white, which I understand, it makes no sense for any hero to wear white, because the second you go over a single rooftop, it's dirty, you look like an idiot. You look grubby almost immediately.
Yeah, that's true.
Also, if it rains, there's that see-through problem. But the fact that it's grey, it took me a few episodes to get over it.
And knowing that it's not just like cotton, like he's not just wearing this material costume, it's a weapon.
Yeah.
And a weapon that's supposed to be used to take down alien threats. And we're not quite sure where the Tick comes from. Like, in other adaptions, there's the mental institution. He breaks out of there. But we don't really know in this show where he comes from. But alien threats, we know that Superion is an alien.
Yeah.
So is he going to be set up as our big bad for season 2?
I'm not sure. I'm interested. This show... I went through those first 5 episodes because they dropped at the same time. I happened to have Amazon Prime and jumped in, bashed through them. And then the fact that I've had to wait a few weeks for the next one has been killing me. But it's great. It reminds me what I enjoyed about the original animated series as a kid. And every time something pops up, like speaking of other heroes or anti-heroes in this case, Overkill. Great idea.
Yeah, I agree.
It's ridiculous. But the whole time when he's on screen, I'm like, that's Deadshot.
Yeah, essentially. And did you pick up on who was voicing his ship?
Yeah.
Alan Tudyk.
Yeah. Great. Which even Alan Tudyk, I mean, they've got some great names on this show. I mean, we've touched on Peter Serafinowicz, Overkill's played by Scott Spicer, who I'm not familiar with on anything else. I think this is probably the biggest thing he's done. Griffin Newman plays Arthur, who people may know, the biggest thing he's been in previous to this was as Casper in Vinyl. His sister Dot, played by Valerie Curry, who I remember from the cartoon, but only after the fact when she starts popping up, I'm like, who's that? Because in the cartoon and in the comics, she has glasses on, like he does.
Ah.
Whereas in this version, she's a bit more...
cool and hip.
Yeah. But she, her biggest thing that I had the whole time watching it, I knew she was from something. Veronica Mars. She's just one of the other girls in school.
Oh, right.
But that's where I saw her face before.
I mean, the biggest name has got to be Jackie Earle Haley.
Yep.
As the Terror.
Yep. Rorschach returns.
And you know what? I've seen all six episodes. Sorry, Jay. Spoilers on the on episode six.
No problem.
But just like we're thinking, is the Tick a figment of Arthur's imagination? You start to think that's definitely going on with the Terror. And the whole reason for this, that the main driving force for this season is whether or not the Terror is really alive. And we find out he is.
Yeah.
And when he confronts Arthur in episode six, it generally is terrifying because you got to see Arthur as a child. His dad was killed in front of him, the same incident that wipes out his favourite superheroes, and then confronted as an adult by the Terror. And the way they've done the makeup as well, generally terrifying.
Jackie Earle Haley's, this is the sort of role, I mean, he can really chew the scenery, go over the top. He seems to be having a ball as it. And even the almost Cobra Commander-like mask that he wears, it's all hilarious. And, you know, we can't bring up the Terror without bringing up Miss Lind, his old number one.
Is she a new character, do we know?
I'm not entirely sure. I can't remember her, although I haven't watched the cartoon since like 2000.
That was a bad question to ask.
But I can't remember her specifically. But the fact that she's Miss Lint, I do remember a very ridiculous thing with the speed of Lint. And Lint, like, how does it get into your laundry? Ah. It's because it's that fast. So I'm wondering if she's not a pre-existing character. Who's it's that funny thing, because it's electrical powers, static electricity. That's why she's Miss Lint, because she can't help but attract Lint to her and Fluff. But if that's, I can't remember if she's a pre-existing character or if this is like their little nod of, remember Lint? That was a whole thing from the series.
Oh, okay. But I wonder if there's like something going on with the characters, because we said in the first animated series, you're introduced to new characters. And then you've got those characters again in the Warburton series, but they're different names. And then we don't get the characters at all with this.
Yeah.
So maybe this is like a more faithful adaptation of the original comic, which didn't have those two characters.
Yeah, possibly. I'm still hoping that we get Sarcastro. Just, he doesn't do anything but make snide comments, and that's... I just find it hilarious.
And Chairface Chippendale, a guy with a chair for a head.
Yeah.
Was that just the animated series?
I think so, but I really want him.
Do you think he'd fit in this world, though? Because although, you know, you've got the Tick falling from buildings, just like the ground crumbles below him and he gets up, bushes himself off and he's fine, do you think a guy with a chair for a head would really work?
I don't know how you do it, like, in terms of budget or how you do it on as a costume, but I think you could make it work. It's ridiculous. You know, even his plans of, I'm going to put my name on the moon so people will, like, worship me like a god. It's the kind of ridiculousness I think the whole show works with. And it's that whole it's that classic thing of a villain is disfigured. That's the whole reason he's a villain. His is just ridiculous that he's got a chair for a head. How does he eat? How does he do anything?
These are all good questions.
But, yeah, and he's the whole thing of, to get respect, I'm going to capture the moon, or I'm going to blow up the moon, or I'm going to have a moon base. And his is, I'm going to draw my name on the moon.
So we've talked about supporting cast, some of our favorite characters. This is a comedy. Is it funny? Did it make you laugh?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Peter Serafinowicz has been in a lot of my favorite comedy stuff in the past anyway. He was on Black Books every time. You know, not a lot, but enough that every time he popped up, a big smile comes to my face. I mean, he was the voice of Darth Maul because his voice is so precise. Like, you know it as soon as you hear it.
And it's perfect for this.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And he's... Usually there's like a dourness to his voice. Like, he's in John Wick 2, he's the guy that John Wick goes to do a tasting when buying guns and ammunition. And he's very dry, and they lean on that for him in a lot of previous things. Even in the comedy stuff he does, it's usually played quite dry and quite straight. Whereas this, he gets to be big and boisterous. And his voice, the booming voice, like, there's that enthusiasm behind it. It's perfect. I love it.
Another movie is The Flatmate, Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
And also is in the Nova Corps in Guardians of the Galaxy.
As Danan Saul. Denarian Saul.
Good callback. Sorry. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, pretty much whenever he's on screen, he lights it up for me. And he generally brings a lot of humor.
Yeah.
Like, whenever he's there, like, the character is like super naive. The pilot is probably my favorite episode. I did think they were going to redo certain aspects of the pilot when it got picked up for a full season. Because you do get that jump from the darker blue costume to the costume we see in the rest of the season. I thought maybe they were going to go back and redo that. Yeah. But scenes where he's getting shot with an automatic machine gun and he's just laughing it off.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of humor that comes with that. And that's certainly a lot of my favorite parts do come from that pilot. And I did dip a little bit in the middle. But by episode 6, I came all the way back around again and found myself enjoying it more as a whole.
Yeah, and small character moments, which he's hanging out in the convenience store on the table. That just, every time, you know, it's such a strange thing. You walk into a convenience store and there's a guy in a big blue costume laughing maniacally in a corner with some old lady.
And he's asking, what do you call this food? And whenever she'd pronounce it, he's just laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I can't remember, it was like a Japanese dish, wasn't it? And he's like laughing off and he's like, let's just call it rice.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of humour to be had. So in closing, we could do like a little bit of a rating, like, you know, I guess it's harder for you because you've only seen the first 5, but just based on what you've seen so far.
I'd give it a 4.5 out of 5. It's my kind of humour. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Venture Brothers anyway. The whole superhero spoof, especially when it's done this well. The cast is brilliant. I mean, Griffin Newman as Arthur, the fact that he doesn't want to step out of his comfort zone, you know, the fact he doesn't know how to use the suit and how he's just like, yeah, tick. And in the end, he has to basically take the tick under his wing because the tick can't think at all. That's all really well done. It's shot really well. You don't see any budget restraints in anything they've done so far.
And I think even when some of the effects look a little bit off, and it doesn't happen a lot, it just fits within the world that they're building and the story they're telling.
Yeah, because of its jokey nature. And I was generally laughing the whole time. As I sat down, only planning to watch 1 or 2, went through all 5, and I'm like, oh, wow, 5 hours just went by. Just absolutely check it out.
When I'm almost where you are, for me, it's a solid 4. And again, it was slightly lower than that. I did dip in the middle, but it came good in the end. And yeah, Peter Serafinowicz, he's just perfect in this role. Turns every one of his statements into a laugh line. Just the overuse, in a good way, of the word chum.
Yeah.
He's just perfect. The show perfectly captures the spirit of the 90s animated series while giving things a darker, grounded feel. I thought this was just great. And hearing that there's going to be a second season, perfect. So that's it for our episode all about The Tick. If you want to contact us about this episode or request a topic for an upcoming show, you can find us on Facebook as Sounds Like Comics Podcast. Our next episode will be all about Marvel's Inhumans, which I did see on IMAX.
And if you missed it, check out Gareth and Adam's thoughts on The Defenders. Also, That Film Stew have recent reviews for It and Kingsman: The Golden Circle. If you're planning on watching Blade Runner 2049 and haven't seen the original for a while, Jason and Rob have you covered. Episode 2 of Rewind and Review is an in-depth look at the sci-fi classic.
As always, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.